And good morning. It is a Friday morning here on WWGH Radio. 16 minutes past the hour, last day of August 2018. You're tuned into Over the Back Fence here on WWGH Radio with Pastor Steve Whitaker and myself, Scott Spears. And today sitting in with us, Sean Kraft. Pastor Whitaker, how's the week going along?
Oh, the week's going along great. We've kind of had some, I've had somewhat of a busy week. I think we, you know, are there ever any weeks that go by that we aren't busy?
I think some just busier than others.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. The days of not being able to do much are gone.
Yeah, it seems that way.
If you have free time, people will fill it for you.
Yeah, you just, the key is don't tell them you have free time.
That's right. Well, if you really ever want to have free time, that's how you do it. You just don't mention that you have free time.
You know, you're right. You're truly right. And you just, if you had, you know what's really great is when you have something huge planned and everyone knows it, and then you don't do it, you just be real quiet about it. Go ahead and do it.
Well, you know, and we're ending the month of August here, which I think is, as I was saying before we went on the air, it's my least favorite month. Because it's kind of that humid hotness, and it's back to school. There are no holidays in August. There's really no weather changes. So I'm ready. I'm ready for September.
You know, September begins. You know, we have just a couple weeks, and the leaves will start turning and falling. And it's just a beautiful time of year. August seems to be just, although this August has been a little bit different. We've had some rain and heat and a lot of growth this August. But, you know, we're going to start seeing some color changes and think about those things we can do with family that involve fall. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I had the editor of the Farmer's Almanac on this week. And the forecast is snow in December, but a mild winter. And snow into April, but a mild summer next year. So that's the forecast from the Old Farmer's Almanac, which is 80% correct, I think is what she told me.
That's pretty interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
How our weather follows trends that way.
It'll be nice to have a white Christmas. I remember 2016 when it was 70 degrees on Christmas Eve. That was awful.
Yeah, that is around here. We're so used to it. In Florida, you know, they wouldn't think anything of it. But here, you know, we kind of expect a white Christmas, don't we?
We do, and this year we will get it, if the Farmer's Almanac's right.
Well, I guess the sale of snowboards and things like that might be up, right?
Yeah. Now, Sean, do you prefer a snowy Christmas?
I do, and I have a snowblower that I buy. I never used it.
last year wasn't bad.
No.
Last year was not bad. Yeah. Now, we do have some tickets to give away because our COSI and our Zumbezi Bay tickets expire on Labor Day, September the 3rd, but it's going to be a very warm and humid weekend, from what I understand, so it would be a good time to go to Zumbezi Bay or COSI. The only caveat is you have to pick them up by 3 o'clock today because that's when we close, so we'll throw out a trivia question, and any time over the next hour that you would like to call in, 740-383-9944, and answer it, you could be the winner of those tickets. Pastor, is there a trivia question on your mind?
Oh, let me think a minute. Yes. What year was John F. Kennedy elected president?
Well, that's a good one. What year was John F. Kennedy elected president of the United States? 740-383-9944. If you would like to answer that question, win the COSI tickets, the Zumbezi Bay tickets, or just answer the question, 740-383-9944, and you have 41 minutes left to do it. What year was John F. Kennedy elected president of the United States? You know, that makes me think of this week and all the pomp and circumstance for John McCain.
Yes.
It was, it's nice that we do that for people of valor.
You know, it really is, and I think that in the case of John McCain, no matter what your politics were, it is nice to see when our government actually comes together and honors somebody across the aisle because of their lifelong service and everything they do. We're not always going to agree with people's politics.
Absolutely.
But we certainly can honor what they do and their heart in what they what they do.
Well, I think his memorial service yesterday in Arizona, having Vice President Biden speak at it, speaks to that. That Biden in his speech got up and said, I'm a Democrat, but I love John McCain.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that a lot of times when you look at our national political figures, you think they hate each other, and or hate's a strong word, but severely dislike each other. But it's kind of interesting. An awful lot of them are really friends behind the scenes. I think that we think many times that they dislike each other more than they do. But it's because of what they represent. They need to show that stark division. But I think a lot of them over the years we've seen, like for instance, the Bushes and Bill Clinton, yeah. You know, they've been great friends for years, right. And they come across the aisle and do that. And there's a lot of them over the years that have done that. But people would think, oh boy, they just, you know, oil and water, and I don't think that's really the case.
Right.
There's a lot of people that I disagree with, even in ministry, you know, as a pastor. But, you know, you see us on the street, you think we were best friends. And some of them are good friends. You know, we just, that's what we're supposed to be. You know, I really struggle today with all the negativity between people, and it doesn't need to be there. We can disagree without being mean-spirited, so to speak.
You know what has become sad to me, though, is that I think more and more we can't, and I don't know what has seeped into society that has made that so prevalent. And it's really unfortunate because one of the great stories, when you speak of the Clintons and the Bushes, that I always thought was great was, George H.W. Bush is still with us, but Barbara Bush is gone. But Barbara Bush did a couple events, charity events, with Bill Clinton later in her life. And she used to announce him as my boy Bill. And Bill Clinton would get up, and the line was, those Bushes will do anything to get another president in the family. So, you know, and these were people who were very fierce competitors in 1992. Bill Clinton unseated her husband, but yet, later in life, they could talk and even joke with each other.
And I think that we should. That's something unique, honestly, somewhat unique in our country. And I don't think, you know, that people realize how much of a, even in, as far as everyday people go, how much of a melting pot we are in our different backgrounds and thought patterns and where we come from and how we were raised. It's interesting, as I've traveled around the country, that I you get in different regions and it's like, this is not home. We're not in Kansas anymore. You know, this is very, very different. But when you go back to, you know, talking, you mentioned that it's getting harder to be kind. And I would agree with that because the message can be so angry. But the problem is, I think when you get really into that message and you get angry and you cross that line, you leave the message behind. And even the news media, all they'll talk about is, you know, in that situation many times, is the anger. And they'll show you the outcome of that. And the message that either side's trying to get across doesn't get anywhere.
Well, I think one of the main problems is that we have right now is the internet, and unfortunately, it is the internet. We use Facebook. I think everybody in here has a Facebook page, and sometimes I scroll. I never put anything political. I never mention anybody by name unless it's some in a nice way. But boy, that's not the case with a lot of other people, and that's sad to me, because 9 times out of 10, these articles that they share or these statements that they make, they don't know these people. Don't know them at all. Never met them in their life.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And it's I think people get caught up in a frenzy. They get caught up in and I think also people get caught up in the fact that, you know, my party didn't win, or my party, and that depends on whatever era it's in and who's ever in, and you're upset because of that. So then with the upset, you kind of go into attack mode. I found it interesting that in our church, two men in our church that were very, very, very good friends. One, actually, in the last year, they have both passed on, one from cancer and the other one from a heart issue. But one of them was about as far right as you could get. and the other one was about as far left as you could get in their politics. And these two guys were, they enjoyed each other's company. They were great. You know, they had common ground. What they had was they had common ground in Christ and in their belief and what they believed, and there was their common ground. But you're right. I don't think we have to be angry. Hey, I don't want to horribly switch subject here, but real quickly, I do want to mention some events coming up.
Yes.
Because one of the things that I talked about it last week, we talked about it, was the importance of families getting together and doing things together with your children, your grandchildren, even whatever kids anywhere. If you're a mentor somewhere, you know, doing that. But there are some things coming up. One thing I thought was kind of interesting, and it was only because I need to take some stuff there for a sister-in-law that is downsizing. But, you know, LaRue has a horse and tack auction every month.
Really?
And it didn't cost anything to go. They've got concessions there. And you know what kid in Marion or anywhere wouldn't want to go watch a horse auction and all the people that come to it? Wouldn't that be fun, kind of, you think about it?
Absolutely.
And I know they start selling horses, I think, at around 1 or 2. But, I mean, LaRue's right up the road. Go watch it. Another thing is that, you know, we have a the Raceway in Marion. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it's Friday night. Kids are free, if I'm not mistaken. And just go on and look at the it's Marion County, MCIR, Marion County International Raceway. And that both of those places are right there on State Route 37 in outside just south of LaRue. And those are fun things to go to, and they're not expensive. I know with our church, always the first weekend in October, which I realize is a month off, we have a thing we call the Day in the Park. And most people around know the park, Prospect has a beautiful park. Well, we have the shelter buildings there, and we have bounce houses and hay rides and food and music and all kinds of games going on for the – all this stuff is completely free, and people can come. It's in the afternoon on that Sunday, the first Sunday in October. And they have – but these kind of things you can do, they just don't cost money. Another one I was thinking of is with our leaves changing. You know, we have some parks and different places to go to with walking trails that aren't far at all away. You know, walk out and enjoy the day with your family. But you know, you don't have to spend a lot of money.
No, you don't.
You really don't.
Well, we have the Popcorn Festival coming up, and if you buy food, that's a little pricey, but there's no admission to get in.
No.
Next weekend, and then the big fly-in drive-in the following weekend out at the Marion Municipal Airport. Again, if you buy food, it's going to cost you some money, but it's free admission to get in. So there are a lot of things going on.
And there always are. If you just, you know, take your time and look, and you think, well, my kids won't be interested in this or in that. I know my kids have, one of my daughters specifically, they like to take their kids to all kinds of cultural events because they want to broaden, you know. But it's interesting because the kids sometimes you think, well, my kids would never be interested in A, B, or C. And all of a sudden you have a kid come home, one of your children come home, and they're real interested in collecting coins because of something they saw. Or some of those, you know, we're losing a lot of that. A friend of mine, well, the fellow that I just mentioned that passed away from cancer, that's what he did his entire life. He was a numismatist. That's a tough one to get out. Basically, he bought and sold old coins. And anyway, the problem in that business is that, you know, when we were growing up, or at least when I'm older than you guys, when I was growing up, there was a kid on every corner that liked to collect coins and do those kind of things. You know, that's going away.
And arrowheads was pretty popular, too.
Arrowheads?
Yep.
Baseball cards,
yep.
Coins, arrowheads.
Stamps.
Model rocketry was huge. All those kind of things. And those are good things that take up your children's time in a positive way.
Well, I remember when on a child's birthday, a lot of times you would get them a model.
Yes.
A car model. I couldn't tell you the last time I saw a car model, let alone being a regular present. It's just not anymore.
Well, you still see them in the stores if you look. And if you go to like Hobby Lobby, they've got all kinds of models. But I know that I've bought a couple for my grandchildren that are interested in that kind of thing, and they've built them. But yeah, models were huge, weren't they?
They were.
Everybody, and I think it was an interesting thing because it taught, I think the real meaning behind it was it gave children a fun way to follow instructions and also how to be precise with something.
Really did.
Yeah.
I know that I've always had an interest in Air Force and warplanes, and I think that probably came from some of those models as a young kid and building them and looking at them. And even the same thing with vintage cars and whatnot, and what we used to call, and I guess they still do call, the muscle cars.
Absolutely.
A lot of that out.
Do want to let people know, 31 minutes past the hour here, the trivia question is still out there. What year was President John F. Kennedy elected president? You can have a pair of Cosi tickets or a pair of tickets to Zumbezi Bay. You have to pick them up by 3 o'clock today, but the number is 740-383-9944. What year was President John F. Kennedy elected president? Or if you want to talk about anything else, anything we're discussing here this morning, please feel free to weigh in. 740-383-9944. There's a lot of things that have changed in the last 25 years.
Oh, yes.
Immensely. We were talking about landline telephones, pay phones, phone books, all gone.
Yeah, I don't know that some of our relatives that have passed on in the 25 years ago would even recognize things today. They're just so different. One thing that I think is huge too is that, and you hear this all the time, is people say, boy, when we were kids, we stayed out till dark. Or when we were kids, you know, we knew to be home at a certain time for lunch, certain time for dinner, and mom and dad never worried about where we are. Whereas today, if you don't know where they're, haven't heard from them in 20 minutes, you're panicking. And you know, I wonder, why is that? And I think that's something we really need to examine. A lot of times, you know, we hear the buzz topics in politics, and the buzz topics are typically, you know what they are. I won't even mention them because we know what they are. But I really wish that sometimes the politicians and our society would get as worked up over child pornography, trafficking, some of these things that are going on that are serious, serious issues that we don't seem to see a lot of. Now, I don't want to take anything away from those people that are out there that are deeply involved in that and getting it, you know, working on that issue. But we need so much more. We hear daily of a child being abducted or taken. And what about the ones we don't hear about? So, you know, those are some of the issues that I really wish that we jump on board. I think, too, that we see a lot of, I don't know how Children's Services today keeps up with their caseloads. I mean, they are off the charts busy. And people say, boy, Children's Services won't do anything. Well, maybe they're doing just about everything they can. I can't. So, you know, what do we do to help? There's a good question in it. What do we do to help? What do we do to help? If we don't like the foster care system, what are we going to do to improve it? How do we offer our help? I've got a real good one. How about being a mentor to some of these kids that really need someone positive in their life? There's so many neat things we can do. And I would love to see a politician stand up and say, you know what, one of my primary concerns is young children and how can we better their lives today, and stand on that rather than fighting over issues of who did what, who said what, who knew what. Is any of that stuff furthering our country along? No, it's not. It's just keeping an argument going. And honestly, I think, to be honest, there's probably so much on both sides of the aisle that nobody really wants to open their closet and say, take a look. You know what I mean? I really believe that. And for one thing, you don't get very high in politics if you're not willing to cut deals. And we also know that something that power does. What does power do?
Corrupts.
Power corrupts. So why would we not expect there to be corruption here and there? And not that we shouldn't seek it out and stop it when we find it, but to base our entire direction of our country sometimes on worrying about that, we have so many things that need attention right now. Our neighborhoods, our economy, so many things we need to look at. And I think the reason I'm talking about this is because it starts at home. It starts in these little grassroots radio stations, these little grassroots places. It starts in the church. The church can do a huge thing. And people aren't going to church. They're laying in bed because they're just so worn out and busy during the week that nobody wants to get up and take that time. But it's such a positive thing for people to do. But all of this kind of goes back. When you look at taking the amount of people that stopped going to church, in my generation, 9 out of 10 people did. And now today, there might be 1 out of 10. And if you look at the level of hatred, the level of people not wanting to get along, I do think there's a direct relationship there. Of course, as a pastor, I would believe that.
You know, it's interesting because this goes all the way back to Shakespeare. You know, uneasy lies the head that wears the crown. When you have all the power, there is bound to be absolute problem. And one thing I think that's fascinating is that this is my new conclusion in life. This is my new conclusion.
I need to write this down. Yeah, right. Don't you?
This is my new conclusion in the Facebook world, and even in the radio world, because I have heard people say that if you talk about something that I disagree with, I will tune you out. Now, that being said, what I have come to this new conclusion in life is that I think if it does, people don't want to be, I'm trying to put this in a nice way, people don't want to be told that they were wrong about something. If they supported something and they were for it and it happened, they're filled with adrenaline. It's a wonderful feeling for them. It's happy. It's their thing. And the second somebody tries to point out that there's something wrong, they can never do that. And I think the underlying reason is they're afraid that somebody's going to say, well, told you so. I think there's a very big circle there.
Yeah, I think there probably is. It's interesting. I got a book in the mail 2 days ago. It was a book on a theological issue. And when I read the cover of the book and what it was about, it's something I totally disagree with. But I can't wait to read it.
That's it.
And I want to read it because I want to say, okay, am I missing something here? You know, or, you know, what's there? And we don't have as much of that discourse that we used to have back and forth and saying, okay, why do you feel that way? It's kind of like this, and I've tried to explain to people when someone will say, how can someone feel that way or be involved in that? We both go to the same church, and why shouldn't Bob? And I said, look, here's the difference. The thing is, people are a product of their upbringing, and they're a product of their environment. And we pray, at least in the church, that with Christ in their life, they're a product of what Christ is doing, believes, and they're walking with the Lord. But if you come from a background that is one way, socially, whatnot, you're going to be sympathetic with that background. And if you come from a background that's another way, you're going to be very sympathetic with that. And it's just like the direction. I'll give you a prime example without supporting either side, okay? For instance, some groups believe that the best way for people to get up is to make them get up. You know, the best way to feed a guy is not give him a fish, but teach him to fish, okay? Other groups believe that if you give them enough fish to where they're as comfortable as everyone else eating the fish, then they're not going to lose that, and then they're going to start fishing. You see the difference? So I'm not saying either side is right. What I'm saying is They're two very valid points to the people that believe that. And that's what we've kind of got in politics. So there's no reason to hate each other, but we need to understand where each other comes from and say, okay, I still disagree with you horribly, but however, I completely understand why you feel that way, and I'm not going to judge you for that, and I'm going to understand that feeling. You know, no matter what issue we talk about it politically, you can go back to this same thing. If somebody wants, well, I'm not going to get any hot button issues. I don't want to talk about that. But the point is that everyone has a background. You know, you used to talk about the Southern Democrat. Well, why was there a Southern Democrat? Because the culture supported Southern Democrats. And you used to talk about this region of this and this region of that. Why is that? Because the culture and everything around them support that. If you're brought up in that, that's not 100%, but typically the direction will go. So begin to understand that part of what you believe is from your culture, and understand that the reason other people believe one way. I mean, we see things in other countries that blow our mind. How can those people, you know, believe that way or do that way? Well, that's what they know. Some of the stuff they eat, Anthony Bourdain, wasn't that his name?
Yeah.
He used to do all those weird foods in those countries. I'm thinking to myself, man, this dude's sick. You know, I'm going to go get sick. I couldn't smell that stuff, let alone eat it. But in the culture that came from, oh, they just, you know, that's the way. It's the same thing with our likes and dislikes. And what we need to understand is that we need to, even though we don't agree with everyone, we need to love everyone. I've got friends that don't agree with me on much of anything. But yet when we see each other, we grab each other's hands, shake each other, how you doing? What have you been up to lately? And shouldn't that be more of our culture?
Right.
You know, if you're a black person walking in a totally white neighborhood, shouldn't you greet them as a person and say, how's it going today? And a friendly, and it's the same way if you're, hey, let me tell you, if you're a white person and going into a completely black neighborhood, there's a lot of unease there too. Shouldn't it be say, hey, how's it going? Where's this animosity at? And I truly believe that the animosity is coming more from the top than the bottom. You know, sometimes the animosity can be politically expedient for either group to help gain support. And I know that several years ago, I was a contractor when I was very young, and I did that for a lot of years. And one of the places I worked the most was Cleveland Avenue in Columbus, and it was in South Linden. So you know the area. And I'm very white, you guys can see me, and that neighborhood was very black. I never one time felt that I was in a threatening neighborhood. I got to know the people where I had like 22 rental properties that I kept up and took care of for a real estate person. And I never felt threatened. I had great conversation with people. I had people fix me lunch. I had one lady one day give me cold medicine because I had a horrible cold and couldn't make the doctor. And she had a bottle and she said, here, take some of this cold. You know, that's my whole point. We're people for crying out loud. You know, God made every last one of us. And it says that he made us in his image. And he designed every one of us for a purpose. What makes me better than you because I'm white? Or what makes me better than you or in one way or another because I'm black or because I'm Chinese or Japanese? We're people for crying out loud. And we need to get over this. And quite frankly, the more we harp on it, the more we point fingers, it really doesn't help the situation. It really doesn't. If you tell somebody that white people hate you long enough, you're going to believe it. And I have to be honest, I grew up in an era, I thought, maybe I'm just blind, but I thought 10, 15 years ago that racism was becoming a non-issue. Because there was so much stuff going on across the border. And boy, has it reared its ugly head in the last 10 years. And I think that it has been driven from the top and not from the bottom. And the truth of the matter is, we start getting this great divide. I personally don't feel any different than any black person I meet. And I know you feel that way, and I'm sure you do.
Yes.
So here's three white guys sitting here that feel is equal and on the same plane as any black person. Where's this narrative that all white people are against black? I don't see it. Matter of fact, I have a lot of friends, and I don't have one friend that is a racist, black or white.
You know, it's interesting. This is a fascinating topic because I do run into people, and they will say, I'm not a racist, but. Now, that's how they start the sentence. Now, if you were just planning on making a statement, you made a very profound statement, soliloquy there, and I never heard you say, I'm not a racist, but this is how I feel. Because now, the whole fact that you would even have to explain to some, when they're not asking, nobody has called you a racist at this point. But if you have the inkling that what you're about to say is going to make them think you're a racist, which to me would have to be why you are saying that statement, then probably don't say it. Because it's probably got some bad connotation to it. And when I look at society, I look at Marion, Ohio, where I've been for 40 years. And we've never had an African-American mayor. We've never had an African-American county commissioner. We've never had a female mayor. We've never, to my knowledge, had an African-American city council person. Now, how can that be?
Well, that's a good question. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not real up on Marion politics in a real heavy way. But I'll say this, that it probably isn't just because of racism. There may be some issues of how many black people have really gotten involved in politics from a grassroots point up. And maybe that's because of racism. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting because my theory on the whole thing is I don't think it's driven by racism. I think you're exactly right. I don't think the part and parcel of it is driven by racism. But I think the problem is the same thing for women, because I can honestly say this for women too. We've never had a female mayor. We've had very few female councilwomen. We have had very few female county commissioners, maybe one or two in the history of the county. Now, my feeling is the problem as a white male, which basically what I've just said is that these three positions in government, the people who shape our city and county, are all white men, or certainly have been the majority. Now, here's why I feel that is. These positions are all taken by the vote, by people going out and vote. And I'm not saying that they're kept away because of racism. But if you're a white man, nobody is not going to vote for you because you're a white man. But there is going to be a small percentage who don't vote for the woman because she's a woman. And there's going to be a small percentage that don't vote for the African American because they're an African American. Now, it's not the majority, and it's not the driving factor, but when you want to get the most people, when you automatically have that working against you, it's not anything you say. You haven't even opened your mouth, and a selection has already made that decision, a select group, a small group, I hope. It's small groups are enough to elect people.
It's interesting you say that, because in our presidential election, 90% of the people, when Barack Obama ran, 90% of the black culture voted for Barack Obama. So there is also an element in the black culture that will not vote for you because you're a white man. So this is what we've got to eliminate, is this whole thought process. So you've got that going against you. It works both ways. I think that one of the key things, though, we certainly don't have time to get into the root of this, and what causes it all, but it is economics. And what I mean by that is, first of all, if you're going to be in politics today, one, you need to have sometimes a little money behind you, a little family behind you. Usually, daggone it, it's always lawyers. But but anyway, if you look at where the money is in Marion, it's white money. It's not black money. So therefore, you're going to, the politicians are going to rise out of that group. They're not going to rise out of the you understand? And am I saying that right? That's not right. I believe in this country, some of our very best people are left behind because they don't have the name, the finances, and these things to get them elected. You know, it's name-driven. I will say myself, I have voted when they've been on the ticket, and I've agreed with what they say. I have voted for black along with white. It doesn't matter to me. That's a non-issue with me. I totally look at what people, what their platform is, what they believe, and what I can agree with. And I think I know personally myself an awful lot of people that feel that way. And it's interesting too, especially in the rural communities. I've lived in rural communities most of my life. And it's really amazing that on a national narrative, they claim the rural communities is where all the racism is. But my personal experience from dealing with the people in the rural communities is that they're probably less that way than a lot of people are in the inner city. And I think that a lot of the problems that we have are cultural as far as, and I'm not talking about black-white culture. I'm talking about culture of, we have a real problem right now in this country with part of our white culture that has no hope, no drive, anything. You know, I see them every day. I see the drug addiction. I see all the things that are going on. We have cultural issues in this country that we need to be addressing, and we need to quit to learn to start caring about each other. Skin, what is skin color? I mean, look what just happened in England, who just got married.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a black-white marriage. And did anyone up in arms? No, they watched it on TV and thought it was wonderful.
Celebrated it.
So I don't think that it's as, I think that it's deep. I think that there's some stuff still driving it. But at the same time, I think that we can come together. I don't want to take up the whole show, but I want to share something with you. I was reading a story. It's called A Country Preacher. It's a book. It was written by B.W. Lakin, who was an evangelist in the early part of the 20th century and up through, actually, about 1980. And in the 30s, he had one of the first meetings in West Virginia, a huge evangelistic meeting where he brought blacks and whites together. And it was a wonderful time. And understand that we can beat this thing if we learn to put differences aside and care about, look, you got two people sitting here, one's black, one's white. They're both hungry. Which one do I feed first? The answer, neither one of them. You feed them at the same time.
Absolutely.
Well, you have to, and I think coming back to the rural issue, I think sometimes that's misrepresented to the degree that I think there are rural states that maybe there is some underlying current of racism. And that's just inescapable if you go to those places, and won't name them, but you know when you're there. But it's interesting because the lower economic people that you were speaking of, I do think they are they're more accepting to race issues. And I think that's why in elections, we talk a lot about suppression now. I think that has changed over the years. Didn't used to hear a lot of talk about voter suppression. And now you do hear a lot of talk about that because if you don't have a driver's license, if you're elderly, if you don't have the money to take the bus or the cab to the polling place, if you're which would mean you were lower economic, you don't vote. If it's eat that day or vote, I'm guessing you're going to choose eat. And that vote, I think, is the... I think those people are less racist, and I think that's one of the problems. I think a lot of people turn out to vote in very big cities. where people walk, where there's a lot of money.
Absolutely.
They turn out to vote.
And I think, too, I think you're right, but I think a lot of it is in the very big cities, there's access. There's all kinds of advertisements that people will pick you up, they'll take you. There's early voting, there's voting by mail, all those things. And people are becoming well aware of it. Now, I'll tell you an interesting thing. Last year, I am a co-FCA leader at our high school, which is Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and we decided to do for one of our community events was to make our church bus available to anyone that couldn't get to the polls. And it was handicap accessible. We had several school students that took a day that they were going to do that, help people on and off, take them to the polls, take them home. You know what? We advertised that heavily. We did not get one call.
You know, that's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up because here in Marion, I believe it was the Senior Center. If I'm wrong, somebody will tell me. But I believe the Senior Center offered the same thing on voting day. And I don't know if the Senior Center advertised it wrong, but I do know that media outlets didn't run it. I do know that. I do know there were particular media outlets that did not advertise it.
Was it because they weren't aware, or it just slipped through? Or
I hope it's because they weren't aware.
I would hope so, too.
I hope so.
I hope so. I think that today, if you desire to vote, I really believe you can find a way to get there. I'm not saying across the board, but I'm saying in most cases, if you desire, we have made voting access a lot easier than it used to be. I see in people that I deal with in different areas, there's a whole culture out there that will complain all day long. There's a whole culture out there, and I'm not talking about a black-white culture. I'm talking about a culture. There's a culture out there that will complain all day long. They will take advantage of everything they can. And I'm not saying, when I say take advantage, I'm not necessarily saying in a bad way. But everything that's out there, they will make of use if they need it. But they won't vote. And then they're, you know, they just, you know, I'm not voting. You know, they're all crooks anyway. I'm not voting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've heard that. And there's a whole culture of doing that, and they need to understand their vote is important. And why it's important. I wonder if we're teaching the necessity of our form of government. And, you know, you said something interesting earlier. You know, we have this huge push in the world right now for a one-world government. If we just had a one-world government, then, you know, we could take care of health care, we could take care of all these things, and there would be a one central place to go. But you said something interesting. Is that absolute power
corrupts absolutely.
Corrupts absolutely. What happens when you get a one-world government and it goes corrupt? The whole world's in trouble. And that's why the United States is so important in what we do and who we are. Our identity in the world, for the most part, even though it's been reported differently in the last few years, has been one of welcome because we have been the country that's out there. We're the first one in when there's a disaster. We always are. Our churches are the first people in when there's a disaster. The money pours in from this country more than anywhere else. And people know that around the world. And we need to let people know that we love them regardless of who they are. But at the same time, we are going to protect our identity for who we are. We're Americans. And I know we've made mistakes in the past. What country hasn't? I am glad that you know, Christ forgave me for all the mistakes I made as a young person, and they're as far from the east as from the west. If I had to carry a load of guilt on my back for everything I did that was wrong when I was younger or through my life, you know, I'd be in a mental hospital somewhere.
We all would.
Yeah, there you go. But the thing is, it's the same thing with our country. You know, we've made mistakes. And people have done corrupt things because it's power. You put people in power, power corrupts in many cases. But we can move forward and be forgiven the sins of our past. We don't have to keep reliving them. And I think this country needs to understand and realize that, you know what, let's start fresh.
What's the old saying? To err is human, to forgive divine.
And isn't that true?
It is, and we don't forgive.
We don't forgive.
We are a society of police officers now. We want to get you. We want to make sure you're doing something wrong, and we never forgive. We never do. We harbor it, and you are that to the day you die. And people, you know, that's an old adage, you know, to err human, forgive divine. I wish that was tattooed somewhere right now.
You know, it's interesting. You know, you could be someone that every weekend, spend every weekend, say you were a single guy, and you didn't have a family to go home with every weekend, and you were a single guy, and you decided that you were going to devote every weekend to being in nursing homes, which we're going to talk about that ministry. I'd love to one of these days. It's a great ministry. Because there's a whole other element of society that are very lonely people. But say you spent every weekend doing that, and you didn't toot your own horn about it or anything like that, because you're doing it for the right reason. It's not about you, it's about them. And then one day, you do some act that makes the news that's horrible. Is anyone going to know you for all those years that you took care of those people?
Even if they do, it won't matter.
But you know what's really bad, and I don't know how we fix this, is that many of our media outlets could know those two issues and will only report the bad one because that's the news.
Yep.
Well, it's interesting, because of this week of remembrance of John McCain, I thought something very interesting is he was caught up in a few scandals in his life, and at the time they were big news stories like the Keating Five and things of that nature. And he did some nasty campaigning, but he always came back and did something good. And in the final analysis, he was thought of as a respected man. Hopefully we all can do that.
I hope so. I think that we just need to be a lot more loving. You know, if I have a reputation as being mean-spirited, or if I have a reputation of not having any patience, those are virtues, you know, that the Bible tells us we need to have faith, love, hope, you know, forgiveness, be long-suffering, and love is the greatest of all. If I have that reputation, then when somebody that I don't even know is dealing with something, they're going to feel that they can find consolation in sitting down and having me care about them.
Before we wrap up this week, you know, it's interesting. That's another one of those old sayings. Patience is a virtue found in the valley of the few.
Yes.
And that's true. This program, boy, this is interesting. We'll have to continue this next week for sure.
Sure.
This program can be heard again on Saturday mornings from 9:10 to 10 a.m. and Wednesdays from 4:10 to 5 p.m. The Pastor Spot with Pastor Steve Whitaker will be live on Tuesday, 5:10 to 6 p.m. It will repeat on Thursday from 3:10 to 4 p.m. and Sunday, 8:10 until 9 a.m., right before this program. I hope everybody has a great Labor Day.
Yeah, I do too. A wonderful Labor Day. Enjoy, spend some time with your family, folks. They need it.
Absolutely.
And community for over 45 years, providing sportsmanship, friendship, and